They say that lightning doesn't strike twice, but it can and often does. I'm talking to Michelle Young Stone. For the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. Michelle, you have a book out that you wrote, about a novel, really. It's a work of fiction, and yet it's based on fact.
It's actually not based on fact. It's all fiction. My publisher really wanted me to highlight the fact that I was struck by lightning when I was 11 to give it more reader appeal or to draw people in. But the truth was, when I set out to write this novel, I wanted to write a book about a girl's dysfunctional relationship with her father and about families and about redemption and forgiveness. And I went to my professor at VCU when I was working on the novel, and I said, you know, this is my idea for my novel, which ended up being my thesis at VCU. I said, and it's about this girl's relationship with her father. And he said, do you know how many millions of books are out there about girls' relationships with their dads? And he said, what can set your book apart from other books? And that's when I thought, well, I wanted to incorporate magical realism because I see the world that way myself. And I thought I could bring the lightning into the book and give it this whole other element. But I don't outline when I write. So as I set out to write the novel, I didn't realize that lightning would end up becoming like such a huge metaphor for the book, or I didn't really realize what a huge role it would play in the novel.
Would you not have talked about lightning had it not been for the professor's comment?
I don't know. I probably would have come to it, or I would have found some kind of edge, because you need something that really, some kind of zinger to get people, you know, interested in reading and turning pages, but it just formed.
Well, as I understand it, you're talking not just about one dysfunctional family, but actually two.
Yes, yes. And the character, there are two main characters, and the second character, Buckley, I didn't even know he was going to be in the novel at all until I got to page 70, and all of a sudden I was writing about these red clay roads in Arkansas, and Buckley and his mother Abigail and his grandmother Winter and this reverend, and I mean, I was kind of annoyed and frustrated because they didn't fit in with what I was writing, and I didn't know why they were there. So I've discovered now as a writer working on my third novel, I have to just trust what some people call like the monkey mind and know that there's something inside of me, or like, it's almost like I'm channeling the characters. I have to have one part of my brain to organize everything and have it make sense, but then there's this other part of my brain where these people just appear, and I know they're meant to be there. So
it's almost as if the book is writing itself?
It is, yes, yes.
And you are there to make sure it gets on paper in a literary way.
Exactly.
Even though you're bringing in lightning as a method of getting into your main story, you were hit by lightning. What's that like?
It was very surreal, and you're in such a state of shock that my mother witnessed me being struck, and I felt a whole lot better when I was writing the book, actually researching the book, knowing that it wasn't just me, that like 50% of people struck by lightning don't seek medical attention. And since I've been visiting multiple book clubs and talking to different people, I've met so many people who have been struck by lightning, but they're embarrassed to talk about it. And I was actually embarrassed to talk about being struck. So when my publisher said, we really want you to highlight the fact that you were struck by lightning, I thought, oh, I don't want to do that. I just want to treat this as a work of fiction because of the fact that no one ever believes you, and no one believes that you could be struck by lightning and not go to the hospital. But it's very common.
In your book, one person is struck by lightning repeatedly. Mm-hmm. One person is struck once and is killed.
Yes.
What's the difference? I mean, what makes the difference between a fatal strike and repeated non-fatal strikes?
Well, I did a lot of research as far as that's concerned, and I don't know if you remember if it was a year or two ago, but on the Bald Mountain, I think it was in North Carolina, a man took his girlfriend up there to propose to her during a massive lightning storm, but they were big hikers. And she was struck, and she had got a direct strike to the head. Now, the lightning was striking all around him, so he was trying to administer CPR. Meanwhile, he had been struck repeatedly also, but not directly, so that lightning was striking the ground, which meant he was like basically a parallel transformer. The lightning would then shoot up into his body. He had second and third degree burns, but his fiance ended up dying because there wasn't any cell phone usage or anything like that. And he did everything he could, but they couldn't get an ambulance up there. So he ended up having to leave her and going down to get somebody. But it's really like, for me, when I was struck, I was holding on to my dad's pickup truck. And I never knew what saved me or separated me from other lightning strike victims until I did research for the book. Because as an 11-year-old, I didn't know anything about lightning, of course. But what I discovered is the metal on the truck. Some people think you're safe in a car because rubber tires, but that's not true. It's the metal on the truck that actually acts as a conductor for the lightning. So when the lightning came into contact with me, the big truck was such a better conduit for it that it blew me off of the truck and I flew like a couple hundred feet to the ground. But the brunt of the electricity went through the truck and not through me. And I didn't have any burns or anything because burns are only present if there's water, and it hadn't started raining yet. There actually weren't any clouds in the sky or anything. So
you mentioned a couple of times now that your publisher urged you to do this or do that. People listening may have wanted to write a book, and they know how very hard it is to get your first book published. Would you have done anything the publisher had wanted just to get at least a first book published so you'd have a track record?
No, absolutely not.
You know how hard it is to get a book published.
Oh,
maybe
I do.
You don't. Maybe you were fortunate.
I was not fortunate. Actually, I received over 1,000 rejections. I started off using the book The Writer's Market, looking for an agent, because you have to have an agent to get a publisher. And I knew I needed a New York agent because that's where the literary publishing world operates. So I went A to Z, querying, you have to send out query letters, agents, trying to get them to represent my book. And I started off, like I was recommended to do, with just doing 2 or 3 queries at a time and getting the just form rejection letters or this isn't for us. If somebody even wrote like their initials on the form letter rejection, I would get excited that they actually used a pen. But no, so I know a lot about rejection, and I started looking for a publisher in 2004, and agent in 2004, and I got my agent in 2008. And in between, I had had some agents who sort of flaked on me or couldn't place the book. Lots of great stories there. I always tell people lots of wasted champagne because you think you've got the agent and you think it's going to work and then it doesn't. But the heart of the book and the integrity of the book is all, I mean, it's my story. And they actually, when I picked my editor at Random House, we had had 2 offers, one from Algonquin and one from Random House, and I spoke with both editors to kind of make a decision who I would work better with. And the editor that I chose had told me that my writing reminded her of a female John Irving, and I knew immediately that she wouldn't, and I wanted to clarify because there are so many minor characters in the novel. And that was so important to me because I felt like the minor characters were really rich and bring so much to the book. And so I needed to make sure she wasn't going to make me cut them. And I wanted to, and you know, I had a lot of questions in terms of what kinds of revisions are you going to want, because you don't want to go with an editor who is going to make you change your book entirely. And she actually said, I love this book so much that I would publish it as it is right now. She said, that said, I'm an editor for a reason. I got my master's degree from Harvard. I know how to sell books and I know what sells, so I hope you'll let me do my job and trust me. And I totally did trust her. And right after my novel came out, the same week, she left my publisher, which was kind of falling apart at the time because they're always reshuffling, and she went to Simon & Schuster. And yay, this summer Simon & Schuster bought my next 2 novels, so I'm going to be able to work with the same editor again. And I totally trust her. and we're very much on the same page. So it's really good.
I'm talking to Michelle Young Stone, the author of The Handbook for Lightning Strike Survivors. And you might think, well, this is a technical manual. And yes, you did the research, but without giving the story away, can you tell us a bit about the plot?
Oh, sure. It's about two very different people, how lightning affects them, how they live through a lot of tribulations, and a lot of bad things happen, particularly to one character who's kind of a Job figure for me. But I guess the story is really about how no matter what happens to us in life, it's more important how we respond to it. And it's a book about salvation, and it's a book about being able to forgive people and about family relationships, because throughout the novel, you know, there are people who are filled with this anger. One of the main characters has a lot of anger towards her father. Her mother has a lot of anger towards her father. There's all of these different relationships that you see. It's definitely a character-driven book, but at the same time, it has a lot of plot to it because they're always traveling from here to there. But gosh, that's not a very great succinct description of the novel. But
could you read a little bit of it for us, just to give us a flavor of the setting and the writing?
Sure. This section is in the beginning of the novel, and it's called Out of Water. And it's about one of the main characters, Buckley. Buckley loved everything about his mother, from the strawberry bumps on her legs where she dry-shaved with her Gillette, to the way her black hair knotted at the nape of her neck. When the mean boys, the ones with fathers who taught them to fight before they could walk, jumped him from behind or from the front, Buckley counted himself a survivor. Knocked hard to the dirt, he got back up. It had everything to do with his mother. She was there for him, and he would always be there for her. He could run fast. It seemed that he was always running from someone stronger, bigger, and meaner, but not faster, and that was a very good thing. Today, he was tired of running. The angry boys called bastard. That word didn't touch him anymore. He'd heard it so often it had lost its meaning. He walked, hearing footsteps at his heels and falling to the dirt. Maybe he needed a beating. Covering his head with his hands, he felt the blows to his ribs and legs. Always protect the head. He breathed in the dirt. Much later, when he was 16, he met Clementine. She smelled like dirt, too, like the earth, like he could bury his face there between chin and collarbone and be protected. Maybe that's why he loved her. When the beating was over, the bullies towed dirt on Buckley's backside and touted, "Cry, baby!" As they left, he struggled to his feet. The thing was, he didn't cry. Not then, hardly ever. They could have kicked and punched until his ribs cracked and his lips split. It didn't make a difference. He wouldn't have cried for them. Maybe that was part of what was wrong with him. He was 11 years old, unable to cry, trying not to run from the world.
Michelle Young Stone reading a part of her book, The Handbook for Lightning Strike Survivors, which, as you see, is not a technical manual by any means. Certainly the mark of a good author is a good imagination. Where do you come up with the characters and the settings? You mentioned Arkansas, but you've never been there.
Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know.
And why did you pick Arkansas as an example?
Just from what I'd read about Arkansas or images in my mind of the red clay roads. And I actually have a girlfriend who is from Arkansas, and she's like, "I didn't know you've been to Arkansas." And I'm like, "Well, I haven't, you know." And people think that I grew up in Chapel Hill because so much of the book takes place in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. But I didn't grow up there either. And actually grew up in Chester, Virginia, in a very blue-collar household. And so as not to make the book too autobiographical, I decided to set it in more of an academic setting where family relationships could be strained, but they could be strained in a completely different way. And so I went to Chapel Hill, and I did a lot of research, and I went to New York and did a lot of research on the Internet. I read a lot of different books. Like, I learned a lot of fun stuff about Galveston, and my dad used to tell me stories about his Coast Guard Coast Guard days in Galveston, and that influenced me. And then my mom would always talk about when they lived in Colorado, and that influenced me, but I took that, the setting of Colorado, and made it Arkansas instead. And she'd actually worked at a free clinic when they were in Colorado in the 70s, and had different experiences that she told me about that I incorporated into the novel.
The portion you read for us just a moment ago talks about what happened to a little boy, a school-age boy, and those who are listening who are male may remember such things in their early youth. But you've never been a boy. How did you know all those things?
Well, my dad grew up with three brothers and always would tell the story of his brother John, like, knocking him down in the dirt and kicking him in the ribs, and I think he exaggerated a lot of it, but...
Well, now, we've all had sibling rivalry and all that, but... The school kids being bullied, that's fairly common.
Yes. Well, it's common with girls, too. I mean, I spent my fifth grade year in Fredericksburg. We lived there for a year, running around the school every day during lunch because this girl was going to beat me up if I didn't give her my lunch money. So, and I was, you know, and I really relate to Buckley because when I was young, I was overweight and I had buck teeth and I got teased a lot. And so I could draw from my own experiences of being kind of an outcast. And I know, since I was little, I've always been really empathetic, and I could always relate to what other people were going through and imagine myself in their circumstances. Like on my Facebook page, it says I was supposed to grow up and be a bag lady because that's what my parents thought was going to happen to me because I was just way too sensitive. They didn't think I'd be able to function in the world. So all that sensitivity and empathy ended up paying off, though, with being able to understand people's situations and imagine myself in their place. And I think, too, in life, no matter who you are, even when we have different experiences from someone else, we can relate to the same emotion that that experience brings out. And that, for me, is what, you know, I try to tap into.
I love the family support. You'll never amount to anything.
Yeah. Well, I found out after I finished my MFA that I was always surprised because I was a latchkey kid and everything. But the one thing my parents were so great about was telling me how much they loved my writing and that I was so talented as a writer. And it was really nice. And I was like, wow. And it, when I'm like 30-some years old, my mother tells me, oh, my gosh, but... we thought you were copying that stuff out of books. We didn't think you were actually writing that. We just thought you were a little delusional or making it up. So it was kind of like they just were surprised. And my mom asked me, she's like, where does this come from, all these different characters and voices? And I don't really have an answer. I started writing stories as soon as I could write.
And you have a couple more coming out.
Yes.
And we'll talk about those when they're out. The book is The Handbook for Lightning Strike Survivors. It is available not only as a regular book, but as a large print book and as an audio book. And are those CDs or tapes?
CDs.
Those are CDs.
And it's also available on Kindle and Nook, too.
So they're easily available even for the sight impaired. Michelle Young Stone is with us and talking about her most recent book. For the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.